entered the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, and you take possession of it and are settled there, take some of the early produce of the fertile ground that you have harvested from the land the Lord your God is giving you, and then put it in a basket. Then go to the location the Lord your God selects for his name to reside. Go to the priest who is in office at that time and say to him, I am declaring right now before the Lord my God that I indeed arrived in the land the Lord swore to our ancestors to give to us. Then the priest will take the basket from you and place it before the Lord, your God's altar. And then you should solemnly state before the Lord your God, my father was a starving Armenian. He went down to Egypt, living as an immigrant, there with few family members. But that is where he became a great nation, mighty and numerous. The Egyptians treated us terribly, horribly oppressing us and forcing hard labor on us. So we cried out for the help of the Lord, our ancestors' God, and the Lord heard our call. God saw our misery, our trouble, and our oppression. The Lord brought us out of Egypt, and with a strong hand and an outstretched arm, with awesome power and with signs and wonders. He brought us to this place and gave us this land, a land full of milk and honey. So now I am bringing the early produce of the fertile ground that you, Lord, have given me. After you've recited this, set the produce before the Lord your God, bowing before the Lord your God, and then celebrate all the good things the Lord your God has done for you and your family, each one of you along with the Levites and the immigrants who are among you. And when you have finished paying the entire tenth part of your produce on the third year, that is the year for paying the tenth part, you will give it to the Levites, the immigrants, the orphans, and the widows, so they can eat in your cities until they are full. Then announce before the Lord your God once again, I have removed the holy portion from my house, and I have given it to all of these, to the Levites, the immigrants, the orphans, the widows, in full compliance with your entire commandment. I haven't broken your commandments. I haven't forgotten a single one. So please, Lord, look down from your holy home, from heaven itself, and bless your people Israel and the fertile land that you have given us, a land full of milk and honey, just like you promised. Then I'm going to skip forward to a time where that whole understanding of what it means to be covenant and what it means to be God's people has just been so fully revealed in the life and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so we have here just a short verse from the letter to the Romans, but it speaks so deeply. So from Romans 12, so now, brothers and sisters, because of God's mercy, I encourage you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice that is holy and pleasing to God. This is your appropriate service. Well, as I said, it's wonderful to join you this time of year and this morning in worship, because quite frankly, it's one of my favorite times of year. And now, I'm a night owl, so it's not just my favorite time of year because of daylight savings and one extra hour, although that does really help. But I love this season of harvest, this season when everything changes. As you might imagine, in my job, I do a lot of driving, and we have such a beautiful part of the world to drive around in, and especially this time of year. I'm an Iowa girl through and through. I tried to leave for a while, went to California and Minnesota, but had to come back, and in part, it was because of those fields that change from empty fields to green and beautiful and bigger and then golden, and then watching the equipment go through the fields and the harvest come in. How quickly our landscape can change as the farmers do that careful work of reaping the harvest. And it isn't just farmers. I know there are many good gardeners in this congregation as well. I love to garden, but rarely get the chance to do it, so I have to do it vicariously. And I told Jenny Jorgensen earlier, I was going to mention stalked her this summer, watching her gorgeous garden photos. And this last week on her mantle, she had a beautiful display of all of those flowers who do that last minute fall burst, you know, where they can't help but do that last bloom. And I've been so excited to hear about the work that you've been a part of with Up From the Earth. Gosh, what a way to really exemplify what it means to bring the first harvest, right? As we were reading Deuteronomy, that idea of bringing forward the food to feed those without. Did you know you collected more than 2,000 pounds, over a ton of fresh produce this year? Let's just soak that in for a minute. Over a ton of fresh produce to feed those who otherwise wouldn't have. What a gift. And yesterday, as I was driving to Cherokee, driving through it, getting caught between behind some farm equipment. That's the only bad part, right? But driving through those fields, watching the harvest come in, I was on my way to the end gathering in Cherokee. This wonderful tradition we have as United Methodists in Iowa of gathering things, gathering first fruits and gathering, bringing them together and blessing them and then sending them out to every part of the world so that people can know of God's love in stuff, but also in spirit. Well, so today's harvest time. Today is also what we call All Saints Day. Typically in the Christian church, we talk about, well, in our what just happened, see, this is my kids that are gone. What just happened this weekend? Halloween, right? And we get to dress up and all of that. But there's something else that happens during that same time. And it's this thing called All Saints Day, where we get to celebrate and take time to reflect upon those who've gone before us. Those who live their life in such a way that we know God's love and are formed by that. This is my first All Saints Sunday after my Grandpa Heber passed away this spring. And it was such a gift as I was driving to the end gathering, something that had been very important to him, to take some time and reflect on the gift that he was to me and to congregations and really to the world, to the way that he had exemplified what it meant to be generous and to be faithful. I know that you have had many saints that you've had to say goodbye to this year. That this past year at St. James, you've had to say goodbye to some very dear people who have formed you and who have taught you what it means to be loving and generous. And then finally today's the day where you get to celebrate the ministry of St. James, where you get to celebrate all those things that you do together, the things that you've done in the past and the things that you hope to do going forward, and a chance to make an individual commitment, to turn in your pledge card and to say that I want to be a part of something bigger than what I normally do just on my own. And I'm willing to make a commitment so that this can be a place of hope for every generation. But what do all these three things have in common? Well, I believe that they speak to the heart of our scripture passages from this morning. Each one is about looking back at what God has been doing in our lives, celebrating, and giving thanks. And then, had you listened to that part of the story before? What are we supposed to do? We bring our offerings to the priest. And then, do you remember that special part in between? I had forgotten, or maybe I never learned it. Do you remember what we're supposed to do? We're supposed to tell the story. And it's not just a happy story. There's some troubled parts in that. We're supposed to tell the story of, this is where I started out, these were the really high points, these were the really low, crummy points. And this is where I am now, God. God, recognizing that you were with me through it all, and because of that, this is why I give. And because of that, this is why I share. Because of that, this is why I sacrifice. I just love that. This is something more than just about stuff or giving something away. This is about relationship. This is about a life of generosity, a life of dare I say, living sacrifice. Now, I know that you've already spent some time this last month with Pastor Michael Slaughter's book, Shining Guides, and his reflections on what it means to be faithful and generous in this time and in this place. This last week, he reminds us of the importance of heart giving, the kind of giving that changes us and changes the world. And he says it really clearly. I've got to get the quote just right, because he says it so well. What we do with what we have makes all the difference in the world. In fact, what we do with what we have has the power to change the world. True worship and the forsaking of false shiny gods calls us to offer our talents, gifts, and resources to God for use beyond our wildest dreams. This way of being, I think, comes from Deuteronomy. It comes from the very beginning of our shared faith story. Now, as I said earlier, you might not be surprised. How many of you have done a Bible study on Deuteronomy? Oh, good for you. And was it your favorite? Typically, when you ask someone their favorite Bible verse or their favorite Bible chapter, that's not their go-to. Like I said, the passage is long and complex. In fact, as I was reading it, were you like, oh, Sarah? You know, you wonder why I'm going on the screen, right? It's a little lengthy. And it just has these rules and guidelines about how we're supposed to live together as individuals and as a community. It's the final book of what's called the Pentateuch, and it's one of those transitional texts that establishes the Israelites as a people in a new land. So this is a key time period in the life of these folks. They are going from a time of wandering to a time of being firmly established as the people of Israel. And the rules and regulations that come along with that are specific commentaries on how they're supposed to be in relationship with God and with their neighbors, and how they're supposed to live that love out. And no area of life is left untouched. And that's why oftentimes it feels a little heavy, and it feels a little lengthy. In fact, this is probably what Jesus is talking about when he says not getting caught up in the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. Because you can spend a lot of time getting caught up in the letter of the law of Deuteronomy. But we shouldn't let that cloud our awareness of this beautiful nugget in chapter 26 of Deuteronomy. This beautiful nugget that really, I think, sums up everything about our relationship with God when it comes to being generous. Commentator Gary Miller observes that this passage is a carefully crafted conclusion to the preceding laws that now express ultimately the theological concerns in the simple act of giving and taking. This compact conclusion to the book's central chapters identifies generosity as the paradigm of obedience that sums up what it means to observe God's commands. So in other words, on this occasion, the most basic way that we're supposed to be people together, this growing and changing people that have been through a whole lot, are summed up with two primary acts, generosity and celebration. And it wasn't only to happen once, it was to happen every time we come together. And it was to happen in such a way that honored an abundant, blessing, generous God. A God that's been through it with us through the highs and the lows. And here, remember, it says they're not yet there in the land of milk and honey, right? They're getting this instruction when it's still rough. And even when they get to that land of milk and honey, those of you who have studied this part of our history, there was a lot of work to do, right? So they're not free and easy here. These are people who are going to continue to struggle and who have really struggled. And yet, that's no excuse not to be generous. In fact, because God has been there with them, they're called to be generous. They're called to live as a living sacrifice, just as we are today. And I said earlier, did you notice this isn't just about stuff? It's not just about a listing of our tithes and offerings to God, but it's a clear requirement that we are to share the story of God's work in our lives as we do it. And what a gift. And that celebration isn't just for those who are bringing the offering, right? It's for the Levites and the widows and the immigrants and the children and the orphans. It's for all those who haven't been blessed by abundance. That's how we relate to God, is how we relate to others through generosity. As I said earlier, this is a story of living sacrifice, something that breathes and moves and grows and changes. something that requires ongoing relationship with God and with one another. I love this, and I'm deeply challenged by it. If this is really the summary of what it means to be a community of faith, as what it means to be God's people, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of sacrifice. Are we really, as a people, supposed to be about generosity and celebration, about heart giving, to be living sacrifices? No wonder Jesus didn't want us to miss the spirit of this law here. So many of the best stories of Jesus are reflective of this, right? In his ministry, we hear about the feeding of the 5,000, the parable of the widow's mite, the first believers sharing all of their goods and resources, Lydia's great hospitality to Paul and others. All of these are built on generosity in telling the story. What a story it is. It's a story of people called, challenged, exiled, redeemed, called, challenged once again, exiled, redeemed. It's a story of hope. And this story continues today. You're a part of it. And it's a story that bears repeating again and again. Well, together as a people of God, we are blessed with so much. Well, do you think that I've watched any of the advertisements now for any of the political campaigns? If so, would I think that we're blessed? No, the world's coming to an end, right? Whether it's the economic crisis or that we're still not recovered from, and whose fault is that? Or whether it's a war here or outreach there, or, you know, and everybody's got somebody to blame, and life is just dismal, right? Where is the hope? We could easily become discouraged. And yet, we as a people of faith have a different story to tell. That even in the midst of some really scary stuff, God is there. God is with us. And God blesses us even in the midst of that time. I want to share an example, a heart-giving story that just resides deeply in my heart and speaks what it means for me to be reminded of the gift of generosity and of love, even in a difficult time. I'm going to tell you about my niece Rachel, who many years ago, in fact, we count now, 9 years ago when she was 7 years old, was diagnosed with something called a co-articulation of her aorta. Now, are there any medical specialists here in the room? I'll do my best to describe this as well as I can. A little piece of trivia. As you grow, your aorta, the main artery of your heart, should be big enough that you can stick your thumb in it. We don't want to stick our thumb in our aorta. But if it was out, it grows proportionally to the rest of our body. Well, Rachel's aorta had not only failed to grow, but a portion of it had actually shrunk to a very small passageway. So if you imagine pushing a stick pin through a piece of paper in the little hole that would be left, that was the size of her passageway instead of a 7-year-old thumb. Okay? The hole that it would leave behind, as I said, was very small. Blood couldn't move through that, and it affected a 3/4 inch portion of her heart. Of her aorta. Well, after much fear and prayers, this portion was eventually removed by wonderfully skilled physicians and caretakers in Iowa City. Well, as you might imagine, this was a pretty scary process for this 7-year-old girl, let alone for all of us adults around her. Before her surgery, she was not allowed to run or jump or do any of those things that 7-year-olds just ought to be doing every day. Well, throughout the ordeal, we as her family, all we wanted was to see Rachel run and jump, to know how much we loved her and to honor the way that she was so brave in facing this. Well, after her surgery, one of her grandparents decided to give her a $100 bill, crisp, brand new $100 bill, to be used in whatever way she wanted. And I have to tell you, in our family, that's a big deal. There aren't $100 bills. And particularly in this family. So you can imagine what that would mean to that 7-year-old. Most importantly to Rachel, now that she could really run and jump again, it meant a big trampoline. You know, those really big ones that take up your whole backyard, and eventually somebody breaks their arm on. You know, it's just bound to happen. And we all know that $100 wasn't going to get her there. But in her mind, this was clear, that this $100 meant a trampoline. Well, we all kind of schemed to figure out how we were going to make that happen. And she held on to that dollar bill for the whole winter, for really a whole good 6 months as she was recovering from her surgery and was gradually allowed higher and higher levels of activity. Surely that trampoline was going to be the best symbol of her recovery, a sign of her new life, something to celebrate. It was really her heart's desire. Well, spring rolled around at last, and with it came some very sad news for the family. Heidi, the young teen that had helped babysit Rachel and her siblings, was diagnosed with cancer and had quickly passed away. Unfortunately, this young woman was not the only person that Rachel had witnessed fight bravely and then lose the battle to this all-too-common disease in their very small town. This 7-year-old, who had experienced such a gift of healing, had already spent many a bedtime prayer praying for classmates and church members who didn't. Why couldn't they go to the hospital and get well just like she did? Now, I wish that you knew my niece so that you could fully imagine this scene. The day after Heidi's funeral, she resolutely came walking down the stairs and said, "Mom, I have made a decision, and you can't stop me from doing it." Well, any parent, I think, probably can, know what that means when you have a child who comes down and says something like that. And you probably get a little anxious. But my sister decided to go ahead and ask what Rachel wanted. And Rachel's response was simple and clear. It was uncluttered without too many reasons or excuses. She just said, "I'm going to give my $100 bill to Relay for Life, so no one else has to be sick." I've made up my mind. Papa said I could do anything. This is what I want to do. Wow. 9 years ago, and it still gets me, right? How do you respond to that? My sister choked back the tears and proceeded to tell Rachel how proud of her she was and that she could give just a part of it and keep the rest for herself. In other words, she could still make a difference just by giving a little, by giving a portion, saving enough for her heart desires. But Rachel would hear none of it. She was better, and she wanted everybody else to be too. And she wanted to give everything she had to make that happen. What a witness. That $100 bill became a representation of her newly restored life, not in the form of a trampoline that she could jump and play on, but rather in a statement of generosity and faith, of great love for her neighbor, those she knew and loved, and those she would never meet. Clearly, I still continue to be overwhelmed by Rachel's story. And quite frankly, I envy her sometimes. I mean, she got it. She knows what Deuteronomy 26 and Romans 12 is all about. Generosity and celebrating. Being a living sacrifice. She wanted everyone to know that God had been with her through really tough stuff and really good stuff. And God would be with them too. That she had new life and she couldn't help but be consumed by a sharing spirit as a result. And she wanted to share it with everybody, no matter what. Now, thank God we didn't lose Rachel during that time, and she is a delightful, if not a little ornery, teenager today. Still finding ways to share God's love in the world, she just spent the last summer down in Honduras at an orphanage taking care of children. She didn't need to wait to become a saint. She chose to become a living sacrifice. She knew what heart giving was all about. Today, you have the incredible opportunity to commit your pledges and offerings. This simple act is one of the ways that we get to say back to God, "I'm so grateful for the love that you have shown me, that you have shown me in good times and bad, for the way that you have led me out of slavery and into a land of milk and honey, for the ways that you have called me and cared for me, and with faith and with hope, I can't wait to see the way that my gift is used to transform your world." Just like Rachel's $100 bill, our gifts and offerings are giving back to God in response to God's generosity enables us to love our neighbor, to be a sharer of the story all over the world. It allows us to fill backpacks with nutritious food for hungry neighborhood kids, to be the mosquito nets in Nigeria that prevent malaria, the blue tarp covering the ravaged home in Pilger, Nebraska, a haven for women and men struggling with issues of mental health at Chester Hall and Henry Muller House, to be the college chaplain that makes holy space for the questions and lives of young people, to be the bottle of drinkable water in the aftermath of hurricanes, to be the congregation of the Women's Correctional Facility in Mitchellville. You get to be a part of all of that. And your commitment becomes a sign of your blessed and restored life in a way that some new toy, some shiny idol, can't. It becomes an affirmation that we received an overwhelming abundance of new life and love from God, and we want to share that in as many ways as we can. Amen. Let us pray. Gracious and loving God, it is so good to be family and to hear the sounds of all of our family members, to know that you are with us in our good times and our bad, that you call us out of that to be mindful of those around us, those who need our love, even as we need yours. God, we come today at a time of harvest, in a time of celebration, in a time of memory of those who have loved us and led us in the past. And God, we come in a time of looking forward as we begin to imagine about what it is that you're calling upon us in our lives today. Bless this time. Bless every person in this room and the children upstairs. Bless Pastor Ryan and Christy and new baby Olivia as they continue to form family in these early days. God, bless this world that you have so lovingly created and called us to care for. Amen.